You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to this podcast on multiple myeloma hosted by Med Learning Group. This program will be geared toward community-based oncologists, hematologists, pharmacists, nurse practitioners, and physicians assistants who manage relapsed or refractory multiple myeloma. In this episode, we'll be giving a brief overview of the disease state and talk about initial management strategies. My name is Chris, and I'll be the host of today's podcast. Joining me today is Dr. Shanali Mehta. Dr. Mehta is an instructor in medicine at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute in Boston. She focuses much of her work on further understanding high-risk disease and studying the role of novel effective therapies, including immunotherapy and cellular therapies for multiple myeloma. Dr. Mehta, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having me, Chris. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, let's start with a little bit of background on multiple myeloma. Who gets it? How many people have it? How is it different compared to other blood cancers such as leukemia and lymphoma?
So multiple myeloma is a very unique cancer. It's a cancer of plasma cells, which are a type of white blood cell, similar to lymphoma and leukemia, which involve white blood cells. However, unlike lymphoma and leukemia, it affects a different population, and it has a very heterogeneous appearance. So in most cases, the median age for multiple myeloma is between 65 and 74 years, with the most recent median age being around 69 years of age. It's diagnosed in over 34,000 people in the U.S. yearly and is responsible for about 12,600 deaths annually. In regards to multiple myeloma, I like to think of it more as a spectrum of disorders, unlike lymphoma and leukemia. With plasma cell disorders, we have precursor conditions like MGUS or monoclonal gammopathy of undetermined significance, or smoldering multiple myeloma that then can progress to active multiple myeloma with evidence of end organ damage or other plasma cell related disorders such as amyloidosis, types of lymphomas, Waldenstrom macroglobulinemia, or other plasma cell dyscrasias. In regards to how it presents, generally with active multiple myeloma, we see patients presenting with bone pain or fractures, fatigue or malaise, oftentimes obviously the CRAB criteria that you may have heard of, so high calcium levels, renal dysfunction, lytic bone disease, or anemia or a low red blood cell count. Oftentimes you can also see with that low white blood cell counts or platelet counts due to bone marrow suppression. You can see constipation due to hypercalcemia or high calcium level. You can see changes in urination or foamy urine sometimes described with patients with kidney dysfunction.
So you alluded to this a little bit, but how about the clinical course of the disease? How does it progress over time, and does that cause treatment goals to evolve as well?
Absolutely. So yeah, so I like to, like I mentioned, I like to think of plasma cell disorders as a spectrum. And so we start on one end with the precursor disorders such as MGUS, monoclonal gammopathy of undetermined significance, or smoldering myeloma, in which case we typically don't have significant symptoms. Generally, we see in those cases an abnormal protein that can be detected in the blood or in the urine due to multiple myeloma. However, if we were to do a bone marrow biopsy, we oftentimes see less than 10% clonal plasma cells in MGUS, or in the case of smoldering, anywhere from 10 to 60% clonal plasma cells without evidence of end organ damage or high risk of progression to active myeloma. And that's again based on the slim CRAB criteria. In regards to how that can progress, so there are different risk models built for MGUS and smoldering based on various factors. And so the most common ones we see used are the Mayo Clinic risk models, which take into account the type of immune globulin being produced by the plasma cells, as well as other factors, the level of abnormal light chains or the monoclonal protein that's being produced by those plasma cells. And that also goes into smoldering myeloma, where we look at, again, the level of bone marrow involvement. We look at, again, the light chain levels as well as the monoclonal protein level. More recently, there was also the Pangea model developed, which takes into account the change in anemia and other factors over time to try to create a more accurate risk stratification for the risk of progression of smoldering myeloma to active disease. In regards to the progression of multiple myeloma, it's something that, again, can present very differently in different patients. And so once MGUS or smoldering have progressed to active myeloma, it does require treatment. There's no standard of care treatment for MGUS at the moment. And in smoldering myeloma, there were several studies done to look at early treatment with Revlimid or lenalidomide with steroids, and more recently now studies looking at immune therapeutics and regimens commonly used in active multiple myeloma and smoldering to see if progression can be prevented. And we're still waiting on many of the results of those studies. In regards to myeloma specifically, once it is diagnosed, it does require treatment, as I mentioned. And the goal there is to achieve a significant depth of response as early as possible, because the deeper the response, whether it's a partial response, a 50% drop in the M spike or measurable paraproteinemia versus a 90% drop, which is termed a very good partial response, or VGPR, or complete response, which is 100% drop, or stringent complete without any evidence of clonal plasma cells in the bone marrow, that can then correlate to long-term outcomes in terms of progression-free and overall survival. We do know that myeloma is not considered a curable disease at this standpoint, but we will talk a little bit about treatment going forward. And so that's definitely something that we discuss with our patients as well.
So you began to mention some of the initial therapies for multiple myeloma. Without going into too much detail, what are some of the mainstays of initial treatment for multiple myeloma?
So when we think about treatment in newly diagnosed or early line settings in multiple myeloma, we often think about combinations of therapies incorporating 3 to 4 drugs from different drug classes at one time. The more recent of those would include the CD38 monoclonal antibody-directed drugs such as daratumumab or isatuximab that, when used in combination with our other drug classes, have been found to achieve very deep levels of response and high levels of response rates. This is often combined with immune modulatory drugs or IMIDs that can include thalidomide, lenalidomide, or pomalidomide. More commonly, thalidomide being used in the newly diagnosed setting in Europe and lenalidomide being used in the early line or newly diagnosed setting in the US. We can then combine that, if tolerated, with proteasome inhibitors, which include bortezomib, carfilzomib, or ixazomib, that are very effective as well at treating early line multiple myeloma. And then this is oftentimes combined with corticosteroids, most commonly dexamethasone, which is, again, very effective at controlling disease as well as side effects of other medications in the early line setting. In some scenarios, we may consider the use of chemotherapy upfront, such as cyclophosphamide, in the setting of a patient having significant renal dysfunction that may limit the use of IMIDs upfront. With, in most of those cases, the goal to switch to an IMID once tolerated. And then we may consider consolidation of treatment with high-dose melphalan, which is another type of alkylating chemotherapy that is oftentimes used in early line setting in multiple myeloma.
So before we get into some of the newer medications for relapsed or refractory cases, let's spend a second on resistance, which is an ongoing challenge in multiple myeloma. How does treatment resistance occur at various stages of the disease?
So as I mentioned before, unfortunately, myeloma is not considered a curable type of cancer at this time point. And that's largely because of how heterogeneous multiple myeloma can be, both in terms of clinical presentation as well as phenotypically within the bone marrow microenvironment. So with treatment, you can have clonal differentiation as well as subclones that are either reduced by treatment or develop resistance on treatment. These clones can then are oftentimes controlled with upfront treatment, however, are often the reason for relapse or loss of that remission over time, as the existing subclones that have acquired a either mutation or a evolutionary benefit to overcome some of the activity of immune modulatory agents such as IMIDs, proteasome inhibitors, or CD38-directed monoclonal antibody therapy. And that's oftentimes what then leads to relapse in many of these cases.
So obviously this resistance that you discussed has underscored the need for new research and new therapies in the area. So once some of the early line therapies have been tried, what other agents can you eventually progress to?
The advantage in multiple myeloma is there's been a significant amount of research as well as new drug classes and therapies that have been approved in the past decade. These include targeted drugs such as BCMA-targeted therapies. BCMA stands for B-cell maturation antigen, which is a protein that is expressed on the cell surface of multiple myeloma cells. And so those therapies can include targeted immune therapeutics such as CAR T therapy or bispecific T cell engagers or BiTE therapies, known for short, that are very effective at treating multiple myeloma in the relapse refractory setting. Those two specifically, the BCMA targeted CAR T and BiTEs, are approved in the in patients that have received four prior lines of therapy. Other therapies include other targeted immune therapeutics, such as monoclonal antibodies targeting SLAMF7. Currently, the FDA-approved antibody would be elotuzumab, that can be used, again, in combination with IMID therapies and steroids, or proteasome inhibitors and steroids. And then we have the exportin-1 inhibitor, selinexor, which again is very effective in combination with other therapies in relapsed refractory myeloma. Outside of that, there are combination therapies that can include alkylating agents such as cyclophosphamide or Cytoxan or melphalan-containing regimens.
So it sounds like there's a lot of new novel areas of study out there, which is very much needed in this disease state. My last question of the day, in recent years, how have some of these newer therapies changed how you manage multiple myeloma in your practice?
I think the other members will also speak about many of the newer therapeutics coming on the scene that have been inspired by things like BCMA-targeted therapies, among others. And I think what we see, you know, over time with the advent of newer targeted therapies, as well as the increased knowledge of the pathophysiology of myeloma, of relapse refractory disease, understanding clonal evolution will give us many options in the future and further understanding of how best we should be sequencing these therapies. You know, over time, we've seen improvements in outcomes in multiple myeloma in regards to overall survival and progression-free survival. And as we learn more about things like measurable residual disease, we'll be able to understand how best to target some of those subclones in the future. I think in regards to my own therapy, we've seen the trend towards using targeted immunotherapeutics such as monoclonal antibodies in the upfront setting more commonly, as well as in some cases in maintenance settings, as we learn more from the Griffin and Perseus studies ongoing in regards to their use in the maintenance setting. And then we've seen, you know, a greater understanding of how to hopefully sequence some of these other targeted therapies that target BCMA antigens and target other myeloma-specific targets in the future.
Well, thanks very much, Dr. Mehta. This has been really informative, and I'm glad we could spend some time talking about the disease state itself and some of the initial treatment strategies. But that's all the time we have for today. I would like to thank our expert, Dr. Shanali Mehta, for taking the time to speak with us today. And thanks to all of our listeners for joining us. Hopefully you're able to tune into other podcasts in this series or other educational programming offered by MedLearning Group. This podcast was brought to you by MedLearning Group. MedLearning Group is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide continuing medical education for physicians. This CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME Essentials. I would also like to give a special thank you to our grant supporter, Regeneron Pharmaceuticals Incorporated, who provided an educational grant for this activity. Thanks very much and have a great day.